We'd like to salute Mr. Francis Wharton, who is a hard, tough Canadian. He's a British Columbia tramper. He lost his dental plate during one of his long treks in the bush. He shot a deer, glued its molars together with household cement, stuck them in his mouth, and then ate the animal with its own teeth. Holy smokes.
Bring it up big, Tony.
Oh, man. If you missed that, I'll have to read that again to you. It says, Canadians admire success, but believe it should be earned. They are a resourceful people. When Francis Wharton, a British Columbia trapper, lost his dental plates during one of his long treks in the bush, he shot a deer, glued its molars together with household cement, stuck them in his mouth, and then ate the animal with its own teeth. Now, there's a lesson in that for all of us. Somehow that sounds symbolic. I mean, well, you know, that reminds me, Tony. How are you on Radio Ancient Trivia? Well, I, this is not a show. We aren't doing anything about trivia. But that story reminded me of something. What character on what radio show was referred to continually? He never appeared. He was talked about. He was the boss, in fact, of one of the characters in the radio show who did appear. And he always talked about his boss. And he would say occasionally about his boss, he says, well, you know, he pulls his own teeth. Who is that? And that to me, that was always been my idea of a very really tough guy. You could just see the boss that they're pulling his own teeth. And in fact, there was an episode when this character in the show was telling his wife about this. And he says he had a bad day at the office. And she said, what happened? And he said, well, Mr. X called me in his office. And he wanted to talk about that new accounting system we're putting in the plant number 12. She says, what's wrong with that? He says, well, he was pulling one of his teeth at the time. And that while we talked, he had these pliers. He was pulling his tooth. Now, what character was that? Well, now, I hate to bring up an unpleasant subject here, really. I hate to do it, especially since, you know, this is a Saturday night and you don't want to hear about unpleasant stuff. But I don't find used teeth particularly unpleasant. I had an uncle, as a matter of fact. I remember when I was a little kid, my Uncle Tom, he was a big, fat guy. He had a tremendous bay window. And he was the kind of guy who not only has a bay window, but always wears a vest. He had a vest. He would always be in a suit. I can't remember him in anything other than a suit. He's like Nixon. You can't imagine Nixon in anything other than a suit, can you? He's always got a suit on. Well, now, on the other hand, there are other presidents you don't think of that way. For example, I always think of Kennedy, the late Jack Kennedy, as always having a suit. But on the other hand, I always think of Harry Truman as wearing one of those wild Hawaiian shirts. Remember that when you see pictures of him in these fantastic shirts, and he always had this great big white cap on. You remember that looked like a golf cap or something? And so I never imagined him in suits, although I guess he was always in suits. But somehow I was thinking, you think of Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt has got this, when I think of Roosevelt, how do you imagine him in your mind? Well, I think of Teddy Roosevelt as wearing these high water breeches all the time. And, you know, he's got some kind of a khaki jacket. That's the way I always imagine Teddy Roosevelt. I always imagine Wilson. Now, none of these presidents, of course, I don't remember any of them, but I always think of them in these ways. I always imagine Wilson as wearing a coat that has a fur collar on it. Now, I don't know why I see that, but he's got a fur collar on it, and he's always outside. I always imagine him riding in some kind of an open carriage with a coat that has a fur collar on it, and he's got a high silk hat. That's the way I see him all the time. Now, McKinley, now I don't even know whether I'd recognize a picture of McKinley, but I always think of McKinley as sitting there with a vest and he's got cigar ashes on his vest. And he's smoking a cigar, and he's sort of fat. And he has a... Did he have a mustache? I always see him with a mustache. I don't know how he looks. Can any of you a picture in your mind today, right now, this minute, how Chester Alan Arthur looks? Would you recognize a picture of Chester A. Arthur? I would. You know why? The other day in my glove compartment, out popped a picture of Chester Alan Arthur in my car. And it was from last summer. Do you remember when all the gasoline companies were giving you match the president games? You remember all that jazz? Whatever happened to all those games? You know? You were supposed to win money and all that. Did you ever hear of anybody that won any money? I never heard, you know. But it was always match the presidents, fill in the ding-dongs, collect the gold medals, match the ancient cars. They had all kinds of these things. And I kept going to the gas station where every time I would buy gas, the guy would give me a picture of Chester Alan Arthur. So I finally says, hey, I don't want no more pictures of Chester A. Arthur. He said, well, you might win the next time. I said, well, why do I keep getting Chester Alan Arthur? There were other presidents. I mean, you know, how about giving me one of Millard Fillmore? I kind of like that picture. Or Andy Jackson. You know, that's a good, lusty president for you. By the way, he was the first president to invite all his friends to the White House to sit around and drink bourbon and chew tobacco. You know, the great Democratic president. But how do you picture, say, Taft? Yeah, that's right. That's a very good picture of him, Tony. His glasses, those little glasses are sticking his eye, you know. Listen, I'll tell you a story about that. You think that a lot of people today probably think that they've got real pizzazz in the way they dress. Did I ever tell you about Stinky Davis? He was in school with me. Yeah, there was a guy. We had a guy, and he was the drum major, and he was unbelievable ego. I mean, you know, whenever I see drum majors today, you know, you see these drum majors, the guy doing the twirling and all that stuff, I always think of Stinky Davis. Well, who was the prime, premier, national champion drum major from my high school band. And he was something else. First of all, he had bad skin. And, it looked like a relief map of the island of Oahu, his skin, which was, you know, not any of his fault, but he would preen. He would literally preen. You know anybody who preens? Well, Stinky Davis, in our band room, we had a full-length mirror. I don't know why, but it was a full-length mirror in the band room. Well, Stinky Davis would stand in front of it with his baton, and he would turn from side to side and arch his back. He would literally preen. Well, so you can see why everybody called him Stinky Davis. He was absolutely, he was the most unloved guy that I ever knew, old Stinky. Well, one time, now here's what I meant by total chutzpah in dress. Stinky Davis, and this was in a history class, and remember, it was in Hammond, Indiana. Stinky Davis came to history class, and I was in this history class, Miss Breifogel. He caused an uproar. Now, all of you people, you know, you think somebody who comes and wears long hair causes an uproar in your class, or he wears bells, or a chick comes wearing hot pants, or something like that. That's nothing. You know what Stinky Davis wore to a history class one day? And it absolutely stopped. Oh, forget it. The history was over for that day. And he just walked right in and sat down. And just looked around. Stinky Davis came into an American history class in Hammond, Indiana, in my high school, in my junior year. And he didn't apologize for it even. He came in and sat down in the class wearing a monocle. You know what a monocle looks like? And it had a gold chain on it. And it came right down and and attached to a button on his shirt. And had a little handle on the side of it, a little thing that stuck out. And Stinky Davis just sat down with a monocle. Well, now, a monocle was the kind of stuff they had in comic strips. That was always Lord Plushbottom or something. You know, that was a thing you laughed at. Well, of course, the class is in an uproar instantly. Stinky Davis sitting there with a monocle on. And he's the ace drum major. He's the national champion drum major. And he looked a little bit like Eric von Stroheim when he wore this thing. He had a real short cropped hair. And he's sitting there with his monocle on. Well, of course, the class is in an uproar. And finally, Miss Breifogel, who was running the class, she says, please, Wilbur. His name was Wilbur.
She says, Wilbur, would you take that thing out of your eye? You're causing the class to be an uproar. And she wasn't asking to conform. She was just saying, take it out of your eye because the class is in an uproar. That's all. Wear the thing, okay, but, the class is in an uproar. So Stinky Davis, he reaches up and he takes this thing with his pinkies like that, see? And he takes it out of his eye. And he turns around and he looked at the rest of the class with this totally withering look like, you slob. He's laughing at my monocle. He looked around. We're sitting there, the whole class is feeling like 5 cents waiting for change. And just looked around. And Miss Breifogel says, now we can continue with the lesson this afternoon. You recall we were dealing with the Battle of Bull Run. That Stinky sat there with the entire class radiating disdain for us. And then the bell rang out. Instantly, Stinky stands up and he puts his monocle back in his eye. Screws it in. You know how they screw them in like that? He screws it in with fantastic taste and gentility. And, of course, immediately all the guys are, hey, Stinky, ha, 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 ha. And then he just walks out of that class, man. And I'll never forget that fantastic gesture of Stinky Davis and the monocle. And so, tonight. Now, you think I'm inventing that story. I'm not. I'm telling you the truth. And anybody who thinks they're really far out wearing granny glasses, I'm telling you, you ought to try sitting there smoking your pot wearing monocles. You don't wear monocles. You wear a monocle. Is that the way you see, Mr. Taft? Sitting there with a monocle screwed in his left eye? Look what the fool. Thank you. Thank you, Tony. That was very good. speaking of teeth, and I might as well, pursue this very unpleasant subject. Speaking of teeth, I just wonder how many people listening tonight are secretly scared out of their skull to go to the dentist. Really, really get nervous when the word dentist comes up. That's a curious problem. I knew a kid, Dick Humbert, who liked to go to the dentist. And he would look forward to going there. Of course, he was a masochist. Little did we realize at the time that we already had a sick kid in the cry, and he'd love to have the guys drill holes in his teeth. And I, as a kid, had a very, very traumatic experience with teeth. I'm not going to tell you the story, which I've told several times on the air. Just suffice it to say that you're listening to a guy whose hobby at one time was collecting used teeth. I collected used teeth. Have you ever seen used teeth, Tony? You haven't? Well, you realize the dentists, when they remove your teeth, or some dentists specialize in extractions, as they put it delicately, when they pull teeth, something has to happen with those teeth. Well, most dentists just throw them out. They put them in a wastebasket, and the next thing you know, a couple of days later, back at the office, there's a pile of old teeth. Just like any other garbage, like potato peelings and stuff. Well, One night, me and Schwartz coming home from school with Flick, we discovered back of the dentist's office this great collection of stuff. We couldn't believe it. I mean, it was a beautiful collection of things like x-rays. They throw out all kinds of old x-rays. And we started with x-rays, a collection of these little plates, you look them up, you see a tooth in there. Well, I began to collect those, and there was only one short step to collecting used teeth. I mean, I had a tremendous, I kept them in a Prince Albert can. And they were beautiful. I had molars. I had two cans. I had one can for regular teeth and another can for molars, the big ones. And some of those molars, you wouldn't believe it, Tony. Some of them had 10, 15 roots on them. I mean, they looked like octopus. bad looking teeth. And we used to swap them back and forth. I'd get one that had a tremendous cavity on it, which was it made it a little bit flawed. But it did have 9 roots. So I would trade one off to Schwartz, who had one without cavity, but only had 3 roots. And we had all kinds of little gradations of teeth. And I had a complete set of human teeth. I had canines, incisors. I had molars. I even had a few wisdom teeth. They're always good. And I had some wisdom teeth. And I used to hide them under the bed, which I will not even go into at this point. One day my mother was cleaning under the bed, and she ran across these teeth, and then it hit the fan, as you probably know, and And I knew secretly in my heart that I was doing something wrong, saving you teeth. And I was right. She says, what is his teeth? Oh, what is this terrible? And I said, oh, they're teeth. Where'd you get them? And I said, well, I found them. Where'd you get them? Well, she immediately realized that it was back of Mr. Smithers, Dr. Smithers' office, who was two blocks down. And so she called him and made him come over and get his teeth. Have you ever had a dentist show up at your house wearing a white coat, picking up his used teeth? Well, that's exactly what happened. It became a family legend. But, you know, this kind of thing, you can go on and on about this sort of thing. And we've all had sickening experiences in our lives. And I remember one time in the Army, you know, you always hear about dentists. And good things happen to me, you know, in the Army, medical things. A dentist one day, I was sent down to the dentist. And you must have gone to the dentist in the Army. And so I went to the dentist there. And boy, they don't mess around. I'll tell you, when, I mean, there's none of this, you know, hanky-panky doesn't hurt, none of this gentle stuff. I mean, after all, when you're going to fill 722 teeth before chow, you get right at it. So I walked in there, and I was, you know, 17. I was just new in the Army, and they had taken a look at my teeth, and they decided I need a couple of fillings. I was used to going to the regular dentist. We had a family dentist, and you'd come in there, and you'd sit down, and you'd read the Reader's Digest, or you'd read the National Geographic, and he had this nice office with the Muzak playing, and there were always a couple of nurses' aides or walking around there, and when you'd come in, he'd say nice things to you. How's it going in school? And, we have a little cavity here. This is our family dentist. He said, this won't hurt now. You just relax. The music is playing. And he would spend a half an hour fixing the cavity and making sure. Oh, listen, I'll tell you, I discovered there's another way to do it. And I can't tell now at this point whether which is best, you know, really, Tony. So I walk into the dentist, about nine guys in the dentist's office in the Army while I'm sitting there on this bench in our fatigues. And so, one by one, this PFC, there was no nurse involved, this PFC would come out and say, hey, all right, you're next, Mac, let's go. And the guy in the end would go in, and wham, bam, and he'd come out again, looking a little confused, you see, staggering a little bit. Well, he went down through this line, and finally he comes to me. And he says, let's go, Mac. Come on. Doctor doesn't have all day. So I said, yeah, okay. And so I walk into this office, and here's this captain. And he very carefully, you could see his captain's bars. He wasn't just a dentist. He was a captain. So I sat down in a chair. He says, open up, soldier. And I open up my trap. He says, oh, boy. He says, all right, Fred, hand me the number three tray. And he... Fred over there, a corporal who was wearing a white coat, hands him this tray full of nut picks. Well, you know those nut picks, Tony. And with that, he says, open up, will you? Now open wide. And I said, yes, sir. And he goes, you know, with a nut pick. And then he says, give me that number two there. And he takes another one. And he goes, he busts the purse off my tooth, which is, you know, obviously he wanted to do that. And I shudder all the way down to my feet. And I'm expecting at any moment for him to say, is it hurting? He never once did. He reached up and he took the drill and smoke is coming out of my mouth and out of my ears. Oh, God. And with that, he packs this Google in it and it's all over. I want to tell you, he filled those teeth in about a minute and a half. And it was too quick to even hurt. Well, now you're going to think he didn't do a good job. Well, let me tell you this. My dentist, I still have those fillings that he put in, and my dentist is always remarking, my official civilian dentist, he always says, he always forgets between times, saying, and I've been going to this guy for years, and he says, I meant to ask you, who did these fillings here, and these two teeth in the front here? I said, well, you know, they're very good. It's a very interesting technique. He has very, very good fillings. Well, I haven't had the heart to tell him it was in the Army. You know, it didn't cost me a nickel. But that was, is it time to make a station break here yet? No, 2 minutes. That's all right. Listen, speaking of 2 minutes, I'm all excited that this is the day before the debut. Now, you have an assignment. This is an official assignment. This is the day before. This is tomorrow is the debut of my television show, Tony. Yes, sir. And you have an assignment now. You are assigned to watch it because it will appear on the final exam. I mean, I'm not going to mess around with you on this. I mean, you either do it or you don't. In this class, there's no goofing off. And it will be tomorrow. And Channel 13. And the time is 8 o'clock. Channel 13. And, of course, it's coast to coast, nationwide. It's not just a local show. So if you're wherever you are, look on your educational channel Sunday night. That's tomorrow night, April the 11th, which is Easter, of course. And you look under your educational channel, and you will see it listed, Gene Shepherd's America. So I'm all excited about it. You know, speaking of Easter and all the rest of it, that I remember one time talking about one of the craziest things I ever had happen to me in the Army, in the medical thing in the Army. It's a weird scene. And this actually is a true story. It happened to me. I was this again in basic, see, I'm in basic training, and one day this guy says to me, this was out on the rifle range. And he's walking along and he's giving out a form. See, he's giving forms, and each one of us had to fill this form out when we were just sitting there waiting for our turn to fire. And it turns out that what the form is about is a health thing, some kind of a health form they passed out, like, did you ever have any broken bones? If so, where? Did you ever have any serious communicable diseases? If so, what type? See, so I'm sitting there, and it was kind of raining, and I filled this thing out. And he came back, this first lieutenant, and he picked them all up, and he went on. Well, the next day, I'm standing out at the reveille in the morning, and they start reading off a list of names. So the following guys are going to have to go down to the... The following guys are going down to the clinic, and we're taking a company by platoons. Guys in the third platoon are going to go down to the clinic and get their eyes examined. They have a special eye examination. You remember that thing? So, okay, you know, I was, you know, from the time I was a little kid, I had eye examinations. You always have them in school. So I go down to the clinic, and there's a whole bunch of us sitting down there, all the guys of the third platoon. And this is WOR New York. And we're sitting down there waiting for our turn. Well, they call two or three of us up at a time and take you into this room, and they have these machines. Of course, down at the other end of the room are the charts with the big E and the big F and the G's and the C's and all that stuff. So they put you behind this machine, and they start adjusting things, and you start reading the chart. Well, I read this chart, get it all through, and the guy says, okay. He says, all right, give this to the corporal on your way out. So on the way out, I handed him this form that the doctor had filled out. And the corporal says, okay, all right. He puts it in the inbox. And that was the end of that for about a week. Well, I'm standing reveille again one morning. And the first sergeant says, the following men will go down to the clinic at the 0800. There'll be a truck out here at the early room to pick you up at 0800. The following men will go down to pick up their glasses. The GI glasses will be issued down at the clinic. And he reads the name, and there was my name. I was getting GI glasses, which kind of surprised me. See, so I thought, oh, well, you know, what the heck? It's free. I don't care. So I go down to the clinic, and I sit there. And I wait for about a half an hour. They're calling guys in. And they finally call me in, and the guy hands me a pair of glasses. Now, you've seen GI glasses. They look like granny glasses is what they look like. If you've never seen GI glasses, they have a metal frame. And they'd be very hip glasses today. I mean, they'd be right in style. They're metal, vaguely Air Corps shaped. You know, they look like the hip glasses today with metal rings. Oh, they're silver metal, though. And I want to say one thing about them. You never saw such corrosion. Every guy that wore GI glasses any length of time still today has a green stripe on his nose, and he's got green stripes behind his ears because these things, and they permanently tattooed you. I mean, there are guys that are still green from those things. But he hands me the glasses, see, and I think he's going to fit them or something. I didn't expect what he did. He says, here's your glasses. He says, now sign this statement here. So I had to sign that I got the glasses. See, I had to sign this receipt, so I signed the receipt. And I never had glasses before, see, so I signed the receipt. And he says, all right, here, let me take a look at him. He takes them out of the envelope, and he puts them on my head. You know, he puts them on me. And this is the first lieutenant, some kind of an eye doctor. Well, he didn't give me an eye test, man. Just standing there looking at him, and I'm looking right in the eye, and he just takes a pair of pliers, and he bends them. See? He says, okay. He says, now look up. Well, I look up. And I see everything's looking like cockeyed, see? So he says, here, give me them glasses again. He straightens out one of the little ear, one of the little nose pads, you know, he straightens it out. Puts my head. Does that feel better? Yeah. Okay, next man. Send in the next one, Corporal. I put my glasses in the little case, and I walk out in the street. Now I got glasses. Well, I was fascinated, see? So I take them out, and I put them on. Unbelievable. I could see nothing. It was all blurred. It was like I was looking at the world through the bottom of Coke bottles. It was a fantastic scene. It was all blurred all over the place. See? So I said, well, gee, you know, I guess you could use them or something. So I put them back in a case, and I stuck them in my fatigues, and I go back to the company area. Well, I go about my business. Well, along comes Saturday, and I'm standing... Inspection. They had inspection in the morning. See, every Saturday about noontime, we had this inspection. So the shepherd's all sharped up. You know, he's got his Class A uniforms on, and I've been fixing my bed over about five times. And I got my shoes shined and a whole bit, see, because it was dependent on whether or not you passed inspection, whether you got your pass that, you know, for the weekend. So everything is sharp. Man, talk about motivation. I'll tell you, I had everything so clean, my belt buckles are gleaming. Because I got this date with this chick, see, in town, and I ain't going to miss it. So I'm standing there. I got my gut pulled in, and they're walking past. And it's the CO, the captain. He's with the first lieutenant, the exec officer. And with him is our first sergeant, Kowalski. And they're walking past. He's got a big clipboard, see. So they arrive at me. They've gone through all the different guys there. And they would ask, well, they had little tricks. Like, they'd ask you things, like, a soldier? And you'd say, yes, sir. Now, give me a third general order. And I will want my post in a manner in a soldier manner. You know, that kind of stuff. Or they say, soldier, what's your rifle number? Quick. Come on. 169-466-SJ. Yes, sir. You can invent numbers, see. That's what I learned very quickly, that if you invent a number and say it out quickly enough, you're always okay. So I'm standing there looking sharp. And he stops in front of me, and my brain is immediately, you know, ready to go. He's going to, what's going to ask me? The fifth general order, what? You know, I'm ready. What is he asking? Soldier? Yes, sir. Wearing them GI glasses they issued you down at the clinic. You're out of your uniform. Them GI glasses were issued you to wear. Now, where are them GI glasses? Yes, sir. They're in my footlocker, sir. Put them on. They didn't give you them glasses for nothing. Those glasses cost about $25 a pair. Now, those are GI glasses they were issued to wear. Now, you put them GI glasses on, or you're not going to get no pass. Sergeant, put this man on report. Oh, GI glasses. Well, I go back to my footlocker. See, he's waiting, so I go back to my footlocker, and sure enough, under the bottom shelf, I lift up the shelf. And by the way, my footlocker was absolutely fantastic. You know that in the Army, they have a specific way you have to keep your footlocker, right, George? Everything. I mean, it's all measured. You get a diagram that's in the Army Field Manual on how your footlocker is to be laid out. The socks in the upper right-hand corner, all neatly, tightly rolled up. Your razor has to be at a specific place, 1.5 inches away from your comb. Everything is all laid out. In fact, in OCS, which is another story, in OCS, most of the guys have a footlocker which is only used for inspection. They buy all second stuff, and they glue it in the footlocker. Yeah, in basic, too. Yeah, they glue it in there. And the actual stuff they use, you know, the real razors and socks are all piled in your barracks bag. And the footlocker's only for display purposes. You never touch any of that stuff. Yeah, it looks beautiful, see. So Shepherd's footlocker, oh, it's a picture footlocker, see. So I take the top tray off, and they're waiting, see. Take the top tray off, and there is a place in the bottom of your footlocker, according to the Army Field Manual, where you keep your GI glasses if you have them. A little flat. There they were. Perfect, see. So I take out these damn glasses, and I pull them out, and I put them on. Well, I can't see anything. I can see nothing but, you know, the whole barracks is blurring now. It's like the bottom of a footlocker. So I walk over to the end of the bunk, and I stand at attention. And the captain says, now that's better. If I come past there the next week, we have any more inspections here, you're not wearing them GI glasses, you're going to get gigged, soldier, and you're going to sign a statement of charges for them. Now, you wear them GI glasses.
And not only that, you're going to wear them GI glasses when we go out on drill, too. Because that's what they're for. Yes, sir. Gabe, forget it. No pass today because of these lousy GI glasses. Well, they go on down to barracks, and I'm standing there. And in the meantime, I'm looking at the barracks. The first time I ever actually wore them for any length of time. And I was getting dizzy. I mean, the whole barracks was rocking. I mean, I got a headache and a whole bit, you know, about 30 seconds. So they go out of the end of the barracks, and I sit down on the bunk, and Gassy says, boy, you booted that one, Mac. Ha-ha. Yeah, knock it off, Gassy, for crying out loud. What do you mean? I'm supposed to wear these lousy glasses now. Gassy's laughing. Four eyes! Yeah, four eyes. That's typical GI humor, you know. Just so beautiful and cutting, you know. GI humor is so creative. It reminds me a little bit of Jersey bowling alley humor, you know, that kind of humor. Four eyes, four eyes, I laugh. No wonder you only scored 148 out on the range. You know what, I've got four eyes, I laugh. Well, I'm sitting there with these lousy glasses, and I got a headache that is splitting my head right down through the middle, see? And I'm very innocent. I never had glasses. I figured that's the way glasses were, and you get used to them. So I take the glasses off, and instantly everything clears up. It looks groovy. I mean, as I look around, the world looks great. So that afternoon, you know, I don't get the pass, so I go down to the day room, and I'm sitting around. I'm eating candy bars, and I go down to the service club, and I have a beer. You know, I'm just killing time. It's the weekend now, and I'm assigned to quarters. So the next morning, I go out for breakfast. And by the end of the weekend, I had kind of forgotten these lousy glasses. I never wore them. Say, the weekend, you're cool. 5:15, Monday morning, I'm standing at Reveille, half asleep, with stubble on my chin, and my eyeballs are sort of hanging out. You know, 5:15 is always rotten. I mean, it's kind of a cold morning. I'm standing there, and the Kowalski's reading the roll. He's got this clipboard, and he finishes reading the roll. All right, Eddie. Shepard, what did Captain say about them glasses? Why them glasses? Glasses. He caught me off guard again. I was not used to the whole idea of glasses, you know. I said, they're back in the barracks. All right, on a double, go back and get them glasses, and I want you to come out here. I want you to wear them glasses, and if I see you without them glasses from here on in, you are going to spend a lot of time on your knees, Mac. Now, get them glasses now. Yes, sir. So I run back into the barracks, and I get the glasses out. I put them on, and I start running out through the barracks, practically fall down the steps because I can't see a damn thing. I get out there, and everything is all blurred again. And I stand in line, and now we're going through the usual company routine, and that headache starts again. I got a headache, like, instantly from these glasses. Well, I figured I was going to get used to it. So I figure what I'm going to do is wear them. So I'm going to wear them. I'm going to wear them until I get used to them. So I go to breakfast. I want to tell you, I'm sitting there at breakfast time, and there were three bowls of Wheaties in front of me. I was looking for these glasses, and everything was blurred. Three bowls of Wheaties. I had 9 cups of coffee all spread out. I mean, I would reach for the middle one. I figured that was the live one. Say, all the other ones were kind of like shifting images. What a headache. Oh. Fantastic headache. Well, I went through the first half of the day wearing these glasses. Unbelievable headache. And that afternoon, luckily, I got transferred. It was at the end of basic. All of us were transferred out. And I get sent about 5,000 miles away. And the whole scene of the GI glasses were forgotten. But it wasn't the end of the story. They're in my foot locker now. I'm carrying them around wherever I go. See, they were just there. They were part of my junk that I never used. For example, nobody has ever been known to use the Army razor that they give you. Do you know that the Army gives you a razor when you come in the Army? It's a curious little plastic razor. And they even give you a package of blades. I had never seen cardboard razor blades before. They were impossible to use in this crazy little razor. Well, you carry that with you all the time. See, it's just part of the joke. They give you a comb, you know, when you get in the Army. And it's one of these plastic combs with the sharpest teeth you ever saw. It's like a whole bunch of little needles, see? So you don't use that thing. That sticks in your barracks bag. They give you all kinds of crazy little stuff like that, which you never use. But you got to have it. See, you're signed out for it. And when they inspect you, you better produce it, man. Or else, see. You know, you're not supposed to use that razor. You just produce it. Well, that was the way the glasses were. So I'd stick them in. I'd carry them from barracks to barracks and from company to company. I always had these. And they were beginning to get moldy. See, these glasses were made out of this silver metal, and they got green. I mean, I never saw such terrible glasses. They were great, see? Well, have you ever had something in your life that you knew one day is going to cause trouble? And you keep putting it off? You keep kind of ignoring it? You know it's going to happen one day, and you just sort of keep ignoring it. Well, that's the way with these glasses. 2 years go by. And now I'm assigned to a company, and I arrive in this new company. And I go back to the tent, and I unload all my barracks bags and stuff like that. It's a new crowd, and I sit down on my bunk. You know, you get so that you're used to being in new companies all the time in the Army. And I go out, and I stand a couple of formations. And about the middle of the third or fourth day, a guy comes down from the orderly room. And he says, "You Shepherd?" And I said, "Yeah." "The first sergeant wants to see you." I said, "What?" I said, "Don't tell me at last my promotion to PFC is coming through." So I go down to the orderly room, and the first sergeant's sitting there, and he's got all my forms out. So he's got all his stuff. "You see a Shepherd?" And I said, "Yeah." So "I'm looking at your supply form here. How come you got two field jackets?" "Two field jackets?" "Yeah, you're charged out for two field jackets. I want you to turn one of them field jackets into the supply room. We need field jackets around here." "Yes, okay. And by the way, I see you charged out with a pair of GI glasses. How come you're not wearing them?" I've forgotten it, you know, for a long time. But these GI glasses, yeah, it's right here. You got a pair of GI glasses. I want to see them glasses. Bring them down here and check them out." "Yes, Sergeant." So I run them back, and these glasses had drifted down to the bottom of my barracks bag with all kinds of crud, which I never used anymore, like money belts, old broken cookies from Christmas 2 years ago, and letters from this chick that I was trying to get rid of, and all that junk down the bottom. So I go through these things. I bet I can't find them. I thought, at first I was scared. Oh, you know, $22 they're going to charge me. You know, the Army charges you for all this stuff. Do you know that if you go to the mess hall and you're in the middle of a 20-hour session of KP and you drop a cup, you're the KP, and you drop a cup, instantly, the mess sergeant, "All right, sign a statement of charges, one cup." Why, I know many guys that have had KP and at the end of the day are behind the eight ball to the tune of $9, you know, just dropping cups and stuff. So I figured, I'm going to charge you $22 for my glasses. It would that it would have been that simple. I dig into my barracks bag, and I found him. Oh, groovy, you know, I found him. So I figured he just wants to see if I got him. So I take him down to this damn orderly room, and I says, "Here they are, Sergeant." And he says, "All right." He says, "Okay." He says, "I'm checking out your equipment here. Listen, Mac, you better wear these glasses. I don't issue these glasses for nothing. You're going to wear the glasses because you're going to be a dangerous guy around this company if you don't wear your glasses. Obviously, you can't see. Now put on them glasses right now." Put on the glasses. I hadn't had these things on for 2 years, so I take them out of the case. There's a little metal case they come in, and they were green. I mean, green. And in the meantime, they had been carried so long in the bottom of the barracks bag that they were covered with a kind of film and crummy-looking thing. So I take them out, and I clean them on my field jacket, and I put them on. Instantly, the same thing happened. I could see the first sergeant. He became nine first sergeants sitting there, all shifting back and forth, and the papers. You know, I couldn't. There were at least 15 tent poles in the middle of the tent there right away, see? And everything is kind of blurred. And he says, "Now look, I don't know where you got away with it in other companies, but you're not going to get away with it in this company. You're going to wear them glasses. They issue the glasses, you're going to wear them. We go by the book. You play ball with us, we have played ball with you. We play fair in this company. And I'm going to tell you this, if you don't play ball..." So I go out into the sunlight with my glasses on again, and I knew it was going to have to come down to some kind of conclusion.
because it was a little tiny company, and there was no way to hide. I mean, every time I knew this guy was going to nail me, every time he saw me without these lousy glasses. So I walked down the company street, and I get about halfway back to my tent, and that splitting headache starts. Fantastic headache. And I've got these glasses on, and I knew there was something. Now, at this point, my animal nature informed me something is wrong. Man has an animal nature. So I'm walking down the company street, and everything is blurred and hazy. See, and I go back to my tent and I sit down. I've got this splitting headache. Finally, I figure the hell with it. I got to do something. So I go back to the orderly room, still wearing my glasses. I walk in and he looks at me and says, "What do you want now?" But, and I probably had that look on my face. I want to get to the bottom of this thing. See, I said, "Sergeant, I want to go to the clinic or something about my glasses." "What do you mean you want to go to the clinic?" "Well, I want to go to the clinic. My glasses are out of adjustment or something. I can't see with them." "What kind of cockamamie story is this? The Army issued them glasses, right?" "Here, sis, right here. You got them. Let's see. It was Fort Monmouth, right? Look at that. It says right here. It's the same of the doctor. Now, you're trying to tell me this doctor don't know nothing?" "Well, I keep getting a headache." "Headache? He says a headache? You've been in the Army 2 years. You can't think of a better one than that? That's the thing that the first year guys think, a headache. The least you could say is you got a backache. So you know they never can treat a backache. Headache? Don't give me that headache bit. Sergeant, I got to go to the clinic. I can't see with these glasses." What kind of guys are they sending me? "All right. You pull out for sick call tomorrow morning." He says, "I want to tell you one more thing, man. If you ain't got nothing wrong with them glasses, you're going to spend a lot of time on your knees." "Yes, Sergeant." So I go staggering out into the sunlight, still wearing my GI glasses with a splitting headache that went all the way down to my feet. You ever had glasses that didn't work, friend? Boy, nothing gives you a headache like that. So I'm walking out, I got what a headache. Well, the rest of the day, I got by taking my glasses off, and I was always pretending I was cleaning them. I'd take them off when anybody was around. Then I'd put them on when somebody'd look at me, and I'd take them off again, cleaning them all the time. So how can I say anything? So, I'm sitting in the mess hall, I'm cleaning my glasses all the time. Or I'd put them by, next to me. Like I saw guys with real glasses do. They take their glasses off and they talk. So the next morning, I can hardly wait because this is going to be bad news. I stand reveille in my glasses. Again, the headache starts up like an ancient volcano. It would start. And boy, the headache, the kind of headache you get from these things is right over your eyebrows and right at the bridge of your nose. You get a headache. Is that where the ocular nerve is, Jerry? Well, I don't know what it is, but man, I want to tell you, it was a headache that was just like 5,000 little hammers pounding away and inside of my head, and somebody was running a blowtorch. So I'm standing reveling, and the first sergeant walked by and says, "All right, any of you guys want to fall for a sick call?" I says, "Me." "Me, Sergeant?" He says, "Oh, yeah, you." And I was ridiculous. Like, all right. He says, "Okay." So I fall out to one side. Well, at 8 o'clock that morning, the truck takes us down to the clinic, which was about a half a mile away. And I arrive at the clinic, and I'm waiting my turn. Well, I finally get called in, and here's the doctor sitting there, saying, doing sick call that day. He says, "Well, what's your trouble, soldier?" I said, "Well, I got these glasses, doctor, the sergeant says I got to wear them all the time." "That's right. You're supposed to wear your glasses. You get GI glasses. That's why we ordered these glasses for you. You're supposed to wear them glasses." "But that's the trouble, doctor. I wear these glasses, and I figured at first I'd get used to them, but they just don't work. I mean, every time I put them on, I see nothing but blurs and stuff, and I don't know what to do." "Let me take a look at your glasses. Here, can you give me those glasses?" So he takes the glasses, and he holds them up to the light. You know how they do? They run it around like that. He looks up at the... He looks at him for about 2 minutes, and finally he turns, and in the next
room. There were about nine little rooms in this clinic. There was a guy down there working on somebody's feet and a couple of other guys down there. So he says, hey, Bob. Bob was another doctor, see. You never call him Bob if you're an EM, you see, but another doctor can do it. So he says, hey, Bob, come in here for a minute. So Bob comes in. He's got a white thing on. He's got a, you know, he's got a couple of these little shiny things on his head. And he says, Bob, I want you to take a look at these. And Bob looks at it and says, he holds them up to the light, see, and he goes, wow. Like that. Wow. He said, are these yours, soldier? And I said, yes. And he says, what's the trouble? And I said, well, I can't see through them. I put them on, and I see nothing but blurs, and I get a headache all the time. And he says, well, sit down here for a minute. He says, come over here. So I go into the next room, and I sit down in front of one of those infernal machines. You know, the kind with all the little lenses that go in and out like this. See? So he sits me down, and he said, now tell me when the E gets in focus. I'm looking. I'd gone through this once before, see, so I'm really wary now. I just said, now. Mm-hmm. All right. Do you see a red dot now? Yeah. So I want you to tell me when the red dot is lined up over the white dot. Now. All right. Mm-hmm. He's writing stuff down. I want you to tell me when it gets clearer now. At what point is it the clearest? And I'm looking through these sort of clear lenses, and he keeps putting in ones I can hardly tell any difference. You know, he keeps putting them in. I find that one. I just took one in the middle, see. All right. Now, I want you to watch these lines. Do you see those lines in there now? You had a whole bunch of little parallel lines, see, that were kind of horizontal lines. He said, now, I want you to tell me when they're lined up. And I noticed that the ones on the right were much lower than the ones on the left. See, they were all cockeyed. So he says, okay. So I'm looking in there, and I see the lines going up and down. And finally, he gets them lined up. I said, now. He says, So he finishes his examination, and he walks up, and he's talking to the guy next door. I'm sitting there, see, with my glasses there. He comes back, and he says, are you sure these are your glasses? I said, yeah. I signed a statement of charges for him. Yeah, they're my glasses. Don't take them. $22. Yeah. Just let me see your... You have your medical form? He said, Charlie, can I see this guy's medical form? So he takes my medical form. He's looking at it. So what is it? Is your name Shepherd? I said, no, it's Shepherd. He said, well, these aren't your glasses. He says, these are for some guy named Shepherd. Howard Shepherd, is your name Howard? I said, no. He said, well, how the hell, where'd you get these glasses? I said, well, they gave them to me at Fort Monmouth. He said, well, you got somebody's glasses, friend. You don't need any glasses. He said, you got somebody's glasses. Then he started to get mad. A little touch of irritation, like I had done it. He said, what kind of stupid thing is this? You're coming down here with these glasses. I mean, these are not, why don't you say somebody or something? Why don't you say something? All of that. He says, hey, Max, this stupid guy here, he's walking around with somebody else's glasses. When did you get him? He says, 2 years he's got somebody else's glasses. What kind of a stoop are they sending? Boy, they're sure getting some cases in the Army now. Thanks, George. He's stupid. You've been wearing these glasses 2 years? I said, well, I only put them on when he made me put them on. He said, what did he do to you? I said, well, I got a fantastic headache. He said, well, you're lucky your eyeballs didn't pop right out. He said, I don't know. He said, I don't know how this guy ever got in the Army that got these glasses here. He said, I don't know what, you know, whatever happened to Howard Shepherd. You stupid. He started stamping it like that. He's stamping it all up.
And he takes my glasses, and he clipped the glasses with a paper clip to this form. He said, all right. He said, okay. He says, you're all set now. He said, don't take any more glasses. He said, if you want some glasses, he says, I can give you some plain glasses. I can sign you. He says, you like glasses? Is that what your problem is? I says, no. They told me to come down, and I took this exam. Oh, boy, he says, no wonder you're a PSC after all this time. So I walk out into the sunlight. See, it was a fantastic weight off of my shoulders. I can't tell you, because for 2 years I knew that somebody was going to make me start wearing these glasses. I knew it. And I walked back to the motor pool, and I got a ride back to the company area. I walked into the first sergeant. You got to report to the first sergeant when you come back from the clinic, see? So I walked back, and instantly he sees me coming in, see? He says, put them glasses on! You stupid! I told you to put them glasses. I said, Sergeant, I'm sorry. I don't have glasses. They took my glasses away. Oh, yeah? He picks up the phone and he calls the clinic. You're not going to get away with that, Mac. Calls the clinic. And he's talking to some PSC. He says, yeah, the guy's named Shepard. You got his glasses down there? They got your glasses down. You left them down here, you stoop. Yeah, I got them here. Yeah, let's send them down. Yes, sir, Sergeant. But they're not my glasses. Oh, get out. They got your glasses down here, you stoop. He hangs up. The next day, my glasses arrived in the mail. And for another year, I carried those glasses at the bottom of my barracks bag. I don't know who Howard Shepherd is. That poor guy probably never saw anything for all the time he was in the Army. So that's the way it is sometimes. But that wasn't just the fact that the Army was stupid. It wasn't stupid. Somehow, you know, I got to enjoy it later on. I would tell the story about my glasses to other guys in the barracks, and it became the only funny story I told in the Army. And speaking of funny stories, don't forget, tomorrow, that's an assignment. Channel 13 here in New York, 8:30, 8 o'clock, 8 p.m., Channel 13, Gene Shepherd's America goes on air, and you better be there. And one more note, you will like it. You hear that? Everybody in this company will enjoy that television show. That's an order.